Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Jake and Stacy. A couple fun guests for you guys today. We got Albert Breer of the MMQB joining us at noon to talk about Julio Jones potentially landing in the NFC West, what the NFC West could potentially look like, what the Seahawks standings are there. We're going to talk about changes that are going to be happening with the salary cap next year and with some penalties in training camp this year. All good stuff. We also got Jason Churchill joining us at 1 p.m. to talk everything Mariners. Let's switch back to the NFL quickly because I'm figuring something out, and I don't know why this isn't more obvious to me every single offseason, Jake. Potential is all the rage in the NFL. It is all the rage. It is a trend that never dies because you can't be wrong with potential. And one of the questions that we asked Albert Breer when he was on with us, spoiler alert, he did join us yesterday. He's got a pretty busy schedule, so we worked around it gladly because it was a great interview. Again, you're not going to want to miss it. But one of the questions we asked was, hey, Albert, friend to friend, Bert, if you will, where are the Seahawks standing from your eyes, from an outside perspective in the NFC West? And he was like, look, I'm going to be real honest, okay, blunt with you. Not the best. Like, it's not that they're not good. It's that the division is tough, and he felt that the best roster, top to bottom, was the 49ers. I don't necessarily – you can make a case that he's right and wrong. You can make a solid case for pretty much any team in the West. You could even make a case for the Cardinals if you wanted to. Even though I have them in fourth right now, it's close. You can definitely make that case. But one of the things that I think is drawing a lot of people to a team like the 49ers and kind of a team like the LA Rams with Stafford is the potential. The potential is all there. You can say, well, yeah, the team last year still had a top five defense. They did. They had a top five defense with what felt like half the roster, including defensive stars, on the injured reserve list. Now you get Nick Bosa back. Now you get guys healthy. And you have Trey Lance. And you get like a really healthy Kittle that can be on the field all year for you. I mean, the potential is sky high. I don't know that the Seahawks have the same kind of potential in other people's eyes, Jake.
Well, they don't. They don't have the same kind of potential because they didn't make as many sexy off-season moves as you saw the rest of the NFC West make, right? I mean, you look at what they were able to do. They, in terms of the 49ers, what they were able to do is get a new quarterback, right? They drafted number three overall, Trey Lance. That's exciting. That's new. That's different. The other part of it, as you mentioned before, injury. Guys coming back, all pro, all star, all pro, all a Pro Bowler type of player, and multiple players coming back on their defense. The Rams going and trading for Matt Stafford. How big of a change and adjustment will that be for their team and the excitement that is there? The Cardinals going out and they acquired a lot of talent, both offensively and defensively. How is that all going to come together? There's a lot more unknowns with those three teams, but it's more exciting. It is more exciting to look at those three teams and look at the potential. But Stacy, I want to remind everybody out there, and I want to remind the Albert Breers and other national media that of what Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner always preach every single year. We hear it every single year that they talk about it. They always say, don't get bored with consistency. Don't get bored with consistency. And that is what the Seattle Seahawks have brought to the table. It is also what they're bringing back. They're bringing back a consistent roster of the same players with minor tweaks and adjustments as you're looking forward to it. And as you look and you project and you start playing the potential game with the 49ers, the Rams, and the Cardinals, well, Stacey, we could do that here in Seattle. Because here in Seattle, you got prominent stars, right? And here are four names that I will give you of prominent stars that if they play to their potential, they play to their full capability, all pro level. Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, DK Metcalf, if those four guys play to their potential, then I think that this team absolutely will win the division and have the ability to do that and amongst all the other talent, all the other stars that are within this division.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that I like the idea of potential is the sexy pick. What does Matthew Stafford look like with the Rams? Do you think if Matthew Stafford was still in Detroit, we'd be hearing conversations about, is Matthew Stafford the dark horse MVP candidate? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Even with a new coach there. The difference is that Matthew Stafford, one of the better deep passers in the NFL, certainly one of the best arms in the NFL in terms of just strength, is coming to an offense with a really brilliant offensive mind and some really great receivers. That's what makes the potential there. That's what gives you that MVP, dark horse MVP candidate conversation. I guarantee you, if Russell Wilson, Wagner, Metcalf, Adams, or a combination of them were gone last year, the Seahawks would be the favorite. Like, almost without a doubt, if Russell Wilson was gone last year and he was coming back this year from injury, people would be like, oh, it's Seahawks. Think of how good they were and they didn't even have Russell Wilson and now they get him back. Oh, my gosh. This is obviously they wouldn't have been like 12-4. But I think that it's about the potential because you can't be wrong about it. If it doesn't work out, you can say, oh, well, Trevor Lawrence, I called him being MVP. What I think happened is just that he was a rookie and needed some time to adjust. You can't be wrong when you make a pick on potential because you can always kind of back out because there's a reason that it's all potential. It hasn't been seen before. So, yeah, I think let's focus on those four guys in particular. Like you said, if Wilson, Wagner, Adams, Metcalf play like all pros, I agree. No reason the Seahawks can't take this division. Now, what if that also means that these other guys play really well, Jake? What if Matthew Stafford does look phenomenal in that offense and Woods and Kupp continue to be great? What if Bosa comes back and is just a wrecking machine, a one-man wrecking machine? What if J.J. Watt looks fantastic on the defensive line for the Cardinals and gets kind of, I don't want to say a second win to his career. He's been defensive player of the year a couple times, but I mean, gets kind of like a revamp in his early 30s with the Cardinals. That's a lot of what ifs, but you're still looking at a tough division is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you still are, but I point to those four guys because not only is their all-pro talent, their ability pretty good in this league, there's no doubt. If those guys are playing at all-pro level, that's good football. But they have the ability to be the best at their position. Those are four guys that you're looking at and going, where do they rank? Where are they in the hierarchy of the top five, the top three of their respective positions? Russell Wilson absolutely can play to that level. Bobby Wagner is already considered the consensus best linebacker in the league. Now, can he add and put his stamp back on that pedestal by being even more disruptive than what he's been in the past two seasons? Jamal Adams can be labeled as the best safety in all of football with how disruptive he plays the game and the special things that he can do. DK Metcalf is certainly on the rise and continuing to grow his game and solidifying himself in the NFL and could absolutely find himself towards the upper half of this of the receiver hierarchy in a very talented league. All four of these guys have the potential playing at their best to, when it's all said and done, be considered the best at each of their positions. That's unique. That's different. That's different than saying J.J. Watt at this stage of his career. What if J.J. Watt plays at his best? Right, he doesn't have the same juice or the same umph that he once did back in 2015.
But they added J.J. Watt to a defensive line where the offense also has DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray.
That's true, but I'm saying that those additions are a little bit different. Russell Wilson, is Russell Wilson's max potential better than Kyler Murray's? Yes, it is. Is it better than Matthew Stafford's? Yes, it is. Is it better than Jimmy G and Trey Lance? I believe it is.
Is Bobby Wagner's max potential better than Fred Warner?
I think that's up for debate, but yeah, I think Bobby Wagner absolutely has the ability in him and still has the legs and everything in him to still be one of the best linebackers be the best, definitively the best linebacker in the league. Absolutely. So these four guys are difference makers, and how are you going to help these four guys, if you're Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and the rest of this coaching staff, really play up to that potential? I think is really key and critical when you talk about the big sexy moves that everybody's paying attention to that in the NFC West. Don't get bored with consistency. I know the Seahawks didn't make a ton of moves. They made good secondary moves to help along with the talent that they have, but they really need these four stars to come through big.
Now, that also means that there's a different kind of pressure on these guys. And we've talked endlessly, right, about like Bobby Wagner on paper, consistently one of the best linebackers. Pro Football Focus, I think, recently had him as the best in the league last year, and there were some 49ers fans that were upset Fred Warner wasn't in there competing with him for that. And you can say Fred Warner had a better season overall last year than Wagner. That's not saying Wagner's bad. That's not saying he's not still one of the best. It's saying that there are people kind of inching in on that crown, and according to some critics, who are taking it, who have taken it. So I think that what you need is, like, not only, oh, hey, Bobby Wagner's always great, Russell Wilson's always great. You need perfect seasons. You need them to have their best seasons. Like, Russell Wilson reaching his potential means you don't have a second half slide. You know
right.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Wagner reaching his potential means that when you look at him and Fred Warner, you say, oh, Wagner. Wagner had a better season. It means it's not up for debate.
No, I fully agree with that. And that, to me, is what you have to see. You can't have Jamal Adams hurt. You have to have Bobby Wagner out there healthy, playing aggressive, playing downhill. You need DK Metcalf and Russell Wilson to be hot all season long. And that's what this is going to require for them, because this is the toughest division in football. They're not wrong. The Albert Breers of the world going out and saying that, hey, the 49ers are probably the best team in the NFC West. I think that that is a take that I can't be mad at. I fully understand where he's coming from, or if he was to say the Rams as well. This is the toughest division in football, but I believe that the Seahawks have the best star talent already on their roster. And if you can get the most out of it, I think that's a recipe for success for the Seahawks. And ultimately, that's what they're banking on. That's where the money is going, Stacey. And that's what all these moves that have been made, or lack thereof, are because they already have the stars they feel like necessary to go and get it done.
Well, let's talk about the other half of that equation, right? Because another reason that from the outside, and I'm just complete honesty with you guys, right now, I don't know that I can commit and say the Seahawks have the best roster in the NFC West. I think it's an incredibly tough division, and I think that there are stars on the other three teams I would love to see on Seattle, which means that you're kind of pining for that talent at that position, right? Like, I would love to see Jalen Ramsey in Seattle. I would love to see Aaron Donald in Seattle. Like, there's some real, real stiff competition there. Then there's the kind of other half of it where it's guys that are unproven, and that's why they're being, I don't want to say rightfully so, but rightfully so, overlooked. Why would Albert Breer, why would NFL.com, why would ESPN national outlets look at the Seahawks and say, this can be DJ Reed's year? This can be the year for that cornerback group, for instance. Mm-hmm. Does it mean it can't? No. It just means that when you're on the inside, you're going to have a different perspective. And there are quite a few groups like that for the Seattle Seahawks. When you're on the outside looking in, you know what you see with those defensive lines? You see Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt in Arizona. You see Aaron Donald, and continuing, this is the front seven, Leonard Floyd with the Rams, right? You see Nick Bosa in a 49ers defensive line that's not as deep as they were in their Super Bowl season, but much healthier than they were last year. And then you see kind of a group of guys in Seattle. You see Carlos Dunlap, who was great but is older. You see Kerry Hyder, who had a really solid year for San Francisco but doesn't have, like, an extensive kind of resume for the course of his career. You see a guy, Daryl Taylor, that you've never seen before. If you're out of Seattle, if you're in Seattle, you've never seen him on the field before. There's a lot of mystery there, or there's a lot of what feels like not a guarantee. Does that mean this can't be the best group? No, year hasn't started yet. Everything's up for grabs, including being the best defensive line in your division. And you don't have to have just one star. You can have a bunch of guys you just never want to take off the field and part of a great rotation. I understand why people are looking in saying, where's the stars?
Well, I can understand why they're saying that as well. But again, when you look at the stars, I think you really have to point to the big four, and those are the four that I'm pointing to, and you can add Tyler Lockett to that list. I don't think Tyler Lockett has the potential to be considered the best receiver in the league per se, but I think that you have Tyler Lockett, who is a great playmaker. Chris Carson's a great playmaker, but those four have the potential to be considered the best at their position for that particular year, and they're going to need the very best out of those four in order for them to be able to get through this division, be able to get back to being the crowned again NFC West champs, for them to eventually, hopefully, go to an NFC championship, then something they haven't done in six seasons. That, to me, is going to be the difference. Those four guys reaching their max potential, this season is ultra critical.
All right, it is 11:15. That means it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
All right, question one. John Morosi yesterday tweeted out something really interesting. The tweet said, Taylor Trammell is one of the most fascinating players in Major League Baseball. He's made an adjustment and has great AAA numbers. So what do the Mariners do? Promote him into a crowded outfield or make him available via trade given the New York Yankees and Chicago White Sox need for a left-handed outfielder? So what say you guys? What would you do?
I have a hard time believing that either one of those teams are going to be pining for someone like Taylor Trammell. Why? Although he is talented, it's not like he has any proven track record of being at the big league level and having success. He went up to the big league level, struggled, got demoted, went to now in AAA, tearing the cover off the ball. But have we seen this for an extensive period of time? I don't think so. I think you need more time to really be able to tell if Taylor Trammell is this kind of batter at the AAA level and in the big leagues. Eventually, guys, they will run into this problem. Eventually, this question will definitely come up. I just don't know if the time is now. I would be very surprised if there was somebody like the Yankees that went out there and really traded some heavy assets for Taylor Trammell, because I think that's what would have to happen in order for the Mariners to feel comfortable walking away from Taylor Trammell at this point in time without Julio Rodriguez coming down the pipe here anytime soon.
Now, question, do we think Taylor Trammell could play right field? Or interchangeably right or left?
I believe what you could end up happening is a nice rotation between really Haniger and Trammell. You could throw Kyle Lewis and Kelnick in there in terms of who's going to hit DH and who's going to play in the outfield. But yeah, I think that could be the case.
Well, because what I'm saying is the Mariners avoided arbitration by getting essentially just for 2021 a $3 million deal with Mitch Haniger. You got to figure out what you want to do moving forward. They haven't extended him. They haven't, outwardly figured that out. So for right now, Mitch Haniger isn't with you in 2022. So do you want to deal someone that is young, that could be a prospect for you, if you aren't planning on keeping Mitch Haniger? I don't know.
I think they are, though. I would be really surprised if they ended up letting Mitch Haniger go at this point. But
they shouldn't.
Maybe you're right, Stacey. As I've said, don't trade Mitch Haniger. Please don't if you're the Mariners at this point. But you're right. It's a possibility.
Number two.
All right. We heard from Scott Servais after the Mariners lost to the A's yesterday. And it sounds like Marco Gonzalez will be returning to the rotation. Are you more excited about the fact that Marco is returning or the fact that we may never have to see another bullpen day again?
I would say that I am more excited about the fact that we're not going to see another bullpen day again. To me, that's just such a glaring eyesore when you look at your rotation each and every single time that they come out, and it makes you question and wonder why the heck are they having this six-man rotation. And having Marco Gonzalez will be great. I'm excited to have the Bulldog back out there on the mound and leading the charge and all of that, and hopefully he's able to remain healthy as he comes back. But yeah, I'm very, very excited to see that bullpen day go away, and hopefully for good.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be for good. They've been kind of snake bitten, particularly with that rotation this year. But
I think
I'm going to go with happy to see the bullpen day go away. Because, gosh, who was it that we were talking about the other day with this? Was it Salk? I can't remember. But someone was like, look, when you've got a young lineup and young guys out there, having a bad bullpen is deflating. Like, when they go out there and when the offense has been struggling, and if they finally get something going and you finally get a run scored and you finally get, Kelnick getting hot and Lewis getting hot, do you know how deflating it is to get up, 4-2 and then lose, or get up worse like 5-0 or 5-1 and then lose? That feels horrible. So I think that you have a better chance of avoiding any of that and helping to build and cement that confidence when you've got your ace out there and when you've got actual starters out there that you planned on being part of your rotation. That's not a slight at Robert Duggar or any of those bullpen guys. It's really important. It has been so important that this bullpen be good. We were all expecting it to regress, but part of the bullpen being good is that you aren't using them as your starters.
Number three.
It's definitely putting pitchers in high leverage situations right off the bat that aren't used to pitching in high leverage situations. Great point, Stacey. The rivalry between Bryce and
Beach. It was okay. I mean, it was all right.
It was the best point, actually, of the morning so far. Station-wide. Potentially statewide.
The rivalry between... Why stop there? Nationwide. I mean, come on. Yeah, let's not stop there. All right. The rivalry between Bryce and
Me Beach. Saying that bullpen guys are better when you don't use them and fatigue them in non-leverage situations. Potentially the rarest, hottest take.
The rivalry between Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka continued again yesterday, with Brooks Koepka after the match is making its comeback, and Aaron Rodgers is playing with Bryson DeChambeau. Brooks tweeting at Aaron Rodgers saying, "Sorry, bro." Bryson saying, "I'm rent free in your head." It's just hilarious how petty these guys are. What's your favorite rivalry in all sports?
Favorite rivalry in all of sports? I mean, growing up here locally, the answer to me is the Apple Cup. That's always been my favorite rivalry. But in terms of right now, what's going on and what's happening right now, yeah, it's Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, it is fun and it is different. You don't see this in golf generally, and not to this level, and certainly not play out on social media. And it's fun to see these guys have personality, and you know, across all sports, everybody's talking about Koepka and DeChambeau. I mean, I think it's great.
I think one of the best rivalries locally for a long time, at least, was when the 49ers were good, Seahawks 49ers. Like, that got those had heated moments. I don't know that I ever, gosh, this is gonna make me sound so like such a jerk. I went to UW, and I don't know that I ever viewed the Apple Cup in like Wazoo as like, oh, this rivalry that keeps me up at night, even when we didn't win a single game when I was there. But I always thought that there was just a little more vitriol, a little more edge when it was 49ers and Seahawks. And I also love a rivalry and a feud that's kind of ridiculous. Like, that's usually going to, if I have to choose between one that's serious, like two teams vying for supremacy in their division, or one that's ridiculous and petty, I'm going to go ridiculous. I'm going to go Madison Square Garden versus Trae Young. I'm going to go Koepka versus DeChambeau. Like, that's the edge.
No, that's true. And you talk about the Apple Cup, like, it's more of like a friendly rivalry. Like, it's not... There are people that take it very far, but as I've experienced, it is more of a friendly rivalry than anything else. It is not hate. It is not vitriol. You know, when I went to BYU and it was BYU versus Utah, that was vitriol. Like, hated each other. Absolutely hated each other. Cook fans, they can be friends. They can be friends for most of the days out of the year until they play each other. Then you got some, you know, rivalry going on. But I agree with you. I agree with you. The Seahawks 49ers at their peak was awesome.
Yeah, I just know so many Cougs, and it always just turns into betting on the game and having fun. I don't know. Like, I don't feel.
I don't feel anger
the way that I do. Yeah. I hate Oregon.
Yeah, like, that's me too. Oregon, I hate them so much.
And I'm sure Wazoo fans hate Oregon. Like, I feel good when Wazoo beats Oregon, which, like, if it's a true rivalry, you don't feel that way. But, and also, those are where, like, the best pranks are. Like, I had my friend's husband and his friends went and put a bunch of rubber duckies in the urinals when they went to play Oregon, and it was just great. I was like, what a funny prank. Like, that's really funny. That's all. Anyways. We have, again, a couple good guests for you guys today. Albert Breer going to be joining us later. Jason Churchill is going to be joining us. But first, the MLB trade deadline is still 2 months away, and the Mariners could have an embarrassment of riches in the outfield. So do they spin any of those guys into new talent? Let's ask Mike Salk next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Mike Salk joins us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
John Morosi, You've heard of him. He's a friend of the show, very good friend of the show. Taylor Trammell, he said, is one of the most fascinating players in MLB. He said he's made an adjustment, has great AAA numbers. So what do the Mariners do? He's looking at kind of a crowded outfield. Do they promote him or do they make him available via trade? Because by all outward appearances, the team is certainly still like building and developing. So why not do that? What would you do with Taylor Trammell?
Well, I'll start to answer that question with a question. Who started in left field for the Mariners yesterday? The answer
Jared
to that
Kelnick.
Question is Donovan Walton, who's never played of the outfield at any level of his career. I don't know if they have a glut of outfielders just yet. Mm. Like, as long as I'm seeing Sam Haggerty, as long as I'm seeing, you know, Donovan Walton, et cetera, in the outfield, you don't have a glut of outfielders yet. Yes, you've got some guys coming along.
I think that's what he's
including.
There's
no guarantees in this world.
Well, he's including like Julio, well, which feels like a guarantee to at least make it to your big league club.
Yeah, but not for a while. I mean, I'm not sure what the rush is.
I don't know. Jerry DePoto said he could debut later this year. I don't think any of us expect it, but I think that makes 2022 feel like a certainty.
Yeah, if I'm another team, I'm looking at Trammell and saying, cool, I'm glad he made some adjustments, but he came up to the big leagues and immediately struggled, so now there's some level of risk involved with that. Why wouldn't you wait until he comes back up, does what he needs to do in the big league, shows that he's got something, and then maybe he's a piece that you deal down the road? It seems like a lot more value to be had there, because if I'm another team, it's, oh, wait, you're making him available now? Why? Are you afraid to put him back in the big league? The whole thing doesn't quite make any sense to me at this stage. I don't know why you would be looking to move one of your prospects who's near the top of your organization and is close to being major league ready. Just doesn't. I don't understand that level of thinking until you know what happens with Haniger. Now it puts you in a much tougher spot with Haniger if you were to do that by the time you get to the trade deadline. I'm not saying you should deal him this year, but at least it's an option that's open to you, and you have some level of leverage where you don't need to move on or you don't need to keep them. You deal a guy like Trammell, and it just puts you in a much more desperate situation, which you don't need to be in.
Right, and you're also, there's no guarantee of when Julio Rodriguez is going to be coming up as well, and that's also kind of a signal that you are going to be bringing J-Rod up at sooner rather than later, which puts you in an interesting spot. Salk, we were posed the question by DJ here earlier. Are you more excited to have Marco Gonzalez back in the lineup, or are you more excited to not have a bullpen day?
Yeah, I'll take both for 500, please, Alex. Both sound pretty good. I don't know. I watched that Duggar kid yesterday. I thought he was struggling mightily, and the fact that he gave them even what he did was a testament to some good luck. They were all over everything he threw. I mean, that's not to say they don't have some good kids in the bullpen. By the way, I really liked what I saw. And it's not like a big name. I don't know if, like, you know how we talk about big names, Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf, Bobby Wagner. I don't know whether Paul Sewald is going to be on that list, but I really liked what I saw from Sewald the other night, and that's a guy I'd like to see a little bit more from. But look, the Mariners have been really hurt by injuries to their pitching staff. I mean, you got three of your opening seven starters who've been on the IL here in the last couple of weeks. So the idea of getting Marco Gonzalez back, your opening day starter who's been all but forgotten here over the last month, I think that'd be a really important thing for them to just kind of balance everything out. He's one of the team leaders. He's your best pitcher and your best starter. That's pretty darn important for them.
My favorite thing about Sewald is that he was called up the same time as Kelnick and Gilbert, and Kelnick and Gilbert kind of took all the headlines, and Sewald has just quietly been, like, pretty solid.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, he's been better than Gilbert, quite frankly, and that's really, of all the things that have happened so far this year, the only thing that has me at all worried has been Logan Gilbert's first couple of starts, first three starts at this point. I hope that there's a little bit more lurking and that he's just going through a little something with his command, because the fastball's caught a lot of the plate. It doesn't have a tremendous amount of natural movement. I know he's got kind of the crazy long arms that should fool hitters because it gets on you quickly, but that has not been the case just yet.
I was going to say, let's stick on Gilbert for a minute. Did you like a bit more of what you saw from him last time, or was it just such a modest improvement that it feels like you need to see more?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see anything that jumped out at me and said, yep, this guy, you know, turned that corner and kind of has it all working now. And look, he's still young and he's just made three starts in the big leagues. This is by no means, you know, putting a nail in that coffin. I hope that it's quite the opposite and that it just takes a couple of adjustments and he's able to bounce back and we see the player that we've been promised. But no, I wouldn't say I saw all that much in that last start either. It just looks like guys see him well, which, you know, is surprising given all of the sort of arm action that he has leading into his delivery. So, you know, see how that improves here over the course of the next few weeks.
You know, Salk, one of the things that we're looking at, and we had an awesome interview with Albert Breer that will be coming up at noon here. We asked him straight up, what does he think the NFC West, who has the best roster? He said the 49ers, and then he would probably have to go with the Rams. Do you agree with that assessment, and does that worry you at all?
Well, first of all, it's a good move taping with Burt Breer, right? You don't want to do it live. That's how he cursed on our air, just not that, you know, years ago.
Can I start, Mike, real quick? I don't mean to put Burt on blast because he was laughing about it and it was self-deprecating humor, but he picked up the phone and said, hang on one sec, I'm just getting into my car. And then he's like shuffling stuff around, turning on his car, moving us to Bluetooth, and he picks it back up and he goes, you guys aren't live, are you? I loved it. I was like, no, thank goodness.
That's so funny. He's a great dude. Look, roster, does that include quarterback? Right? If you're including quarterback and waiting for quarterback position and just how important it is, I don't know that I could put the Niners there. I know they've got the defensive line if everybody's healthy, but I just think the quarterback situation is too much of an unknown. Jimmy Garoppolo didn't give you much last year. You don't know what you're going to get. With your top pick there. So I don't know that I can say that the Niners are ahead right now of either the Rams or the Seahawks. I'd probably still have to put the Rams number one. I know they didn't win the division last year, but they spanked the Seahawks 2 out of 3 times. I think I'd probably, unfortunately, have to go with the Rams. I don't like it, let me be clear, but I think I'd have to say it.
You know, Saul, the point that we were trying to make is, look, don't be bored with consistency. And also, the Seahawks didn't make big, sexy moves in the offseason, but that's also because they have their star talent already on their roster as well. And you have four guys that, between Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, DK Metcalf, Jamal Adams, those are four guys that, at their best,
sure,
they're not just great, but they're potentially considered the best at their position.
Agreed. Anybody feel a lot more comfortable if, like, there was a little bit of news on Jamal Adams, though?
Yeah.
Just a little bit? Like, I'd feel a lot better if there was just a little bit. I don't want to see a Cam Chancellor situation. Now, I know he's not quite at Cam's level yet, you know, in terms of what he means inside that locker room. But, gosh, I sure, like, would feel a lot better knowing that that deal was done and that he was going to be happy and productive and here to bring all of the parts of his personality and leadership that were a big part of why he was acquired.
All right. He is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, you guys, when it comes to picking favorites in the NFL, quarterbacks lead the charge. Stars lead the charge. But maybe nothing matters more than potential. It's why Pete Carroll and John Schneider better be right with their adjustments this year. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners begin a 4-game series against the Texas Rangers tonight. Chris Flexen will be making the start. First pitch is at 7:10 p.m. with pregame show starting at 6 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Now, earlier in the show, we were talking about why it is imperative that four players in particular, DK Metcalf, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, have the year of their life. And this is why it's important, because no other moves were really made to add a star talent. This isn't last offseason when the team went and acquired Jamal Adams via trade in the summer, and all of a sudden it was, what will this defense look like? In training camp, you know what the conversations were? This can be Legion of Boom 2.0. This can be the secondary, the best secondary that they've had since 2013, and just, like, for the record, 14 and 15, pretty solid for them as well. But but it didn't end up happening. Jamal Adams set a record, NFL record, for sacks by a defensive back with 9.5. Fantastic. But that secondary as a whole, strung together, I think finished with the 28th worst pass defense, essentially. I mean, there was a lot of room for improvement. And now they're short Shaquille Griffin. He's out of here. Meanwhile, around the rest of the NFC West, and this goes back to our conversation about potential and excitement, The three other teams made star additions. They did what you did last season. The Cardinals went out and they got J.J. Watt for the defensive line. I know that a Cardinals fan would probably be, and don't forget A.J. Green. No, I remembered A.J. Green. I'm not including A.J. Green right now. They went out and got J.J. Watt, added him to their defensive line. They're still in the running for potentially adding some other guys. They went and got, didn't they get the center from Oakland? Didn't they sign Harrison or Hudson?
Yeah.
Hudson Harrison?
Hudson, Rodney Hudson.
Rodney Hudson.
Yeah.
They went and got him a center that you wanted. The Rams, obviously their biggest move was making an upgrade, underline upgrade at quarterback, bringing in Matthew Stafford. And then, of course, the 49ers get healthier and bring everyone back. Got their quarterback of the future, potentially their quarterback of 2021. And guess what? They're one of the favorites in the running for a trade for Julio Jones. Stars are being added to the rest of the rosters in the NFC West, and yet John and Pete have decided to just make some small adjustments and bring back much of the same roster. I don't think it's a bad bet, but it's a bet. It's a gamble.
It is. It is a gamble. And it also comes back to the essential question, guys, of what would you rather see? We have seen this organization for the most part. There have been a few splashy moves, no doubt, as they've gone about their business. But for the most part, they have been financially very careful. Draft capital-wise, very careful outside of what happened recently with Jamal Adams in that trade. They have been very frugal in a lot of ways in terms of how they try to spread everything out, right? And it's not that they are leaving any money on the table in terms of their cap each and every single year, but they are really trying to spread the wealth out instead of going for those big splash signings. And you talk about those adjustments, Stacey. To me, it is on Pete Carroll and John Schneider for them to successfully determine those necessary adjustments. And they have made those adjustments. Those adjustments need to pan out in order for this team to take the next step. What are those little tiny tweaks and adjustments, Stacey? Let's go through the list. How about Shane Waldron? That's probably your biggest adjustment and tweak that you made. You swapped Brian Schottenheimer for Shane Waldron. You swapped Gerald Everett for Greg Olsen. Gabe Jackson over Mike Iupati. Kerry Hyder Jr. and Alden Smith. Well, and we don't know what the heck's up with that situation, but you added those two guys to your roster. Competition at cornerback is another tweak that you made to your roster. And then you also made the decision of Dwayne Eskridge over David Moore, right? Those are little tweaks that you're making to your roster that you're hoping can round out and can help the rest of your talent that you already have, this veteran group that you already have.
And maybe they wanted to make other moves and just couldn't get in on that bidding war or couldn't get a trade done. Whatever it was, I'm kind of speaking for them in my mind right now. But from an outsider's perspective looking in, it seems like they were like, you know what? We like most of what we have. We feel like we've got most of a Super Bowl roster. We've got a perennial all-pro linebacker. We've got a guy, a safety we gave up two first-rounders for, and we're probably about to pay a lot of money to. So we feel good about him. We feel good about that defense. We feel good about the additions we made on the defensive line. We feel so good, in fact, that we brought back two of those guys for another season, Carlos Dunlap and Ben Samayoa. And we feel good about Russell Wilson. Him being here right now, we feel good about this. You feel good about these pieces, so why change anything? Why not just roll out much of the same with, like you said, Jake, a couple little adjustments? What that means is you aren't going to be the sexy pick. You're not going to be the pick that people in Vegas look at. And there's no Trevor Lawrence here. There's no Urban Meyer. There's no Tim Tebow. I'm just kidding. There's no pick here that makes you sexy. You're not the sexy team in the NFC West. Hate to break it to you, but you're not going to be that pick because you don't have any big stars coming in this year. That's not a slight on the moves they've made. When I say, you know, adjustments, I'm including bringing Chris Carson back, which I think was the right call, and I think he is one of your stars. I'm talking new additions like the other teams have made, shaking up the landscape of your division. It means
right.
That you might be, you're not underrated, but it means you might not be a betting favorite. It doesn't mean that it's the bad choice. It doesn't mean that you made a mistake. In fact, I think that when all of us, you listening right now, when all of us look at this roster last year, every single one of us think they should have gone further. I don't think they would have won a Super Bowl. I don't. I'm telling you right now. I don't think that defense, as many as improvements they made, was good enough, and I don't think that offense was firing on all cylinders. I think they probably would have lost in the next round. It doesn't matter. They should have gone further than they did. And they should have been able to kind of like maybe get in there. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't the best roster in the NFL. They weren't the second, third, or fourth best roster in the NFL. But they were good enough to be in that conversation and good enough to get a shot. And they didn't. They were outed sooner than they needed to be. So why make drastic changes? So all of us are looking at this thinking, well, what was the issue? What if the issue wasn't a big personnel thing? What if it was your play calling sucks sometimes? Well,
yeah.
Bring in a new offensive coordinator. I mean, I'm just saying, like, maybe they did make the right adjustments, but that's probably why you're not seeing them as this constant betting favorite.
Well, exactly right. And that's how they evaluate their roster. That's how they evaluate their roster. They felt like they had the pieces. They had everything almost that they needed, and they just needed to make little tweaks. We just need to make tweaks to this roster this season, Stacey, and we can get over the top. We can get over the edge. And remember, KJ Wright, after the game was over, that shocking end with the Rams, and KJ in his post-game press conference was stunned. He was like, I gotta be honest, guys, like I don't have much to say because I was not anticipating us being in this situation. For the first time in a long time since 2014, KJ Wright said, I envision this team going deep into the playoffs. And that is a big statement. And if KJ Wright felt that, then you got to imagine that Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and upper level really felt the same way, and that they didn't need to make these big wholesale changes, but they needed to make the right moves in order to get the most out of this roster, to maximize the talent. And if you're Pete and John, and you're just going to tinker, and you're just going to do these little moves, I would say changing offensive coordinators, not little, but the rest of these other moves, they've got to pan out. Gerald Everett has to be better than what Greg Olsen was.
Right.
Gabe Jackson has to be that solidifying factor for your offensive line. Kerry Hyder Jr. and Alden Smith, they better work out, right? Because you had other options available to you in free agency. These decisions better pan out and better improve your roster.
And it's not only the decisions and adjustments you made, it's the ones that you counted on being here again. You didn't go out and add a quarterback. You didn't go out and add a middle linebacker. You didn't go out and add a top receiver because you felt like you had the best guys. Well, they better play like the best guys, right? Russell Wilson needs to be better than he was last year. Bobby Wagner, DK Metcalf need to be better than they were last year. Even if they had good years, they need to be better because that's part of what you're counting on. That's part of your equation when you're putting your formula, your magic sauce together to make your Super Bowl team. That's part of what you're counting on too. We could keep talking about this forever. We're going to have Albert Breer of MMQB joining us in just a couple minutes, and then Jake and I are going to jump into some fun stuff for the timelines, fun stuff for NFL headlines, and Jake has a really awesome idea for a brand new game we're going to be playing coming up at 12:45. You guys are going to love it. It's going to require some involvement from you guys on the text line. I can't wait to play it with you. Before we get to any of that, though, Albert Breer joins us right around the corner.